Hello and welcome once again to Podcast in the Woods. As always, I am your host, Boomer, and joining me is my amazing and wonderful co-host, Gabby. Gabby, how are you doing this morning?
Does it feel like it's been like 3 months since the last time we did this?
A little bit, yeah. It's
Yeah, I feel like I haven't recorded with you in forever.
Well, that's because like the last couple of times that we did it, I think we recorded back to back, so like that's just the way that it worked out for our schedule. So yeah, we ended up like hammering a couple of episodes like really quickly, and then
you're
and
right.
It's been a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
But today we do have a very special episode, not just because it is Gabby's pick, and we'll get into what we're going to be talking about, but we are joined by a very, very special guest. A friend of mine, and we are so excited to have you, BP, from the Let's Talk Horror show or channel. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do that every time. The Let's Talk Horror channel.
I forget
channel.
What it's called.
How are you doing?
I'm living the dream. Happy to be here. Excited to speak to you again, Boomer. Obviously, you were on the episode we did all about Alien. You were my knight in shining armor on that episode, and it is such an amazing episode that I still love listening to myself because I love how much we loved Alien, and yeah, you were amazing. And then I finally get to speak to Gabby as well, which is absolutely bloody lovely.
Yeah, I know. I'm so
let's see if you still have that opinion at the end.
I've listened to the show. I'm all right.
Well, I think we're going to be safe this time because it is your pick, Gabby. This is not something that I picked. So I know you actually like the film that we're going to be talking about. I have not subjected you to this one, The Devil's Rejects, today from Rob Zombie. So
yeah,
I really like this one and I cannot wait to get into it. But before we take one more step, we have introduced our guest, but BP, why don't you talk a little bit about the Let's Talk Horror channel and what it is and where the listeners can find you.
This is the bit where I'm really shit at plugging my own show, isn't it? You can basically, the Let's Talk Horror channel is purely that. It's a channel dedicated in talking about horror. That's why I set it up. That's why I still continue to do it. I absolutely love doing it. I am on every social media account, working every bloody single day to do something and bringing out horror related content. You've got the podcast itself, which Boomer's been on and I absolutely love doing, and that comes out once a month. The newest episode is just dropped, all about Reanimator, which was a real fun one to do. So we just do deep dives into pretty much everything and try and make it as fun as possible. And then the extra part of the channel is the YouTube channel, which is basically just me talking absolute rubbish about horror and loads more horror related content. And I recently uploaded my first ever interview that I did with like an actual director, not just some bloke I met off the street, an actual director of a horror film, Final Summer. He's the nicest guy. And I actually got through my anxiety of doing that episode, that interview. And that's up on our YouTube as well. So you can basically find me and Let's Talk Horror channel and Boomer on my Alien episode everywhere.
Fantastic. Yeah. As always, all those links will be down in the description. You owe it to yourself to check out all the amazing things that BP has done. You know, not just that Alien episode, but I had a lot of fun doing that. I'm not sure that I brought a ton of stuff to that, but...
You sure did. Listen, my daughter will not stop talking about you. She's downstairs, and before we came up and did it, she will not stop talking about it because how much she loves your voice. Literally. She's like, oh, you're recording with Boomer today. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And she's like, oh, I love his voice.
I know. That is like, that was like the sweetest thing that I've ever.
That's so sweet.
I know, right? And I don't get it, but I do appreciate that. That's awesome. And yeah, like I said, guys, please, please, please go check out what he does. And honestly, I mean, we're kind of interviewing a director today ourselves because he is also an aspiring filmmaker and has an amazing short film on his YouTube channel. So go check out all those things. It's awesome. I
Thank you.
Love it. I love it. I really do. And now that all of the kissing ass is out of the way.
I've got a brown nose.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go ahead and hop into this film? So I really, really enjoy getting to talk about a film from Rob Zombie. And there's a number of reasons for that. And I'll kind of get on my thoughts on that. And we'll start with you, BP, first on this question. But are you a fan of Rob Zombie? Because he has a tendency, and I know that you're out there, you're on the Twitters, you see all the stuff. There are people that absolutely love Rob Zombie, and there are people that can't stand his shit. So where do you fall on the spectrum of him and his films? And I mean, if this is your favorite film, don't give that away, but you could kind of talk about some of his others and what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about talking about it, because talking about Rob Zombie is actually one of my favorite subjects as well, because I feel like I've got a really interesting history with him. I'm not that interesting enough to be like a personal history. I've never met the guy, although I fucking love to. But I have always been a big fan of Rob Zombie ever since I was a kid. And I worked it out the other day that I went and brought Hellbilly Deluxe, his first solo album. I went and brought that the day it came out in 1998, which made me 12. So it goes to show how messed up I was back then to now still loving Rob Zombie's music. So when you watch Rob Zombie's music videos, you listen to his music, the aesthetic of everything that he does, he's like, it's almost like a natural progression that he would go into movies. But the problem is that Rob Zombie makes Rob Zombie movies. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing in regards to the originality, but I'm saying that his films are style over substance. And the issue that I have with him is, I'm not going to get into loads of it now. I'm not going to get into, because we'll go through this loads in the episode as well. But pretty much, I haven't enjoyed any film that he has made apart from this one. I'm not going to go into too much as to why or whatever yet, because I think this is his best film by far, purely because this one actually feels like a film. It has its problems and it is still very Rob Zombie, but there's something about this film that really struck a chord with me in regards to going, well, this feels different to a normal Rob Zombie movie. Yeah, if that makes sense.
It really does. And we'll get into kind of why it does, but yeah, you're absolutely right. This one is kind of unique in his filmography, but yeah, we'll get it all into that. Gabby, what about you? I know that there are some people out there that have heard our House of a Thousand Corpses episode, or maybe heard us talk about it on Ian's show, but you know, we're getting new listeners all the time. So for those out there that, you know, have not heard your take on Rob Zombie, what's your opinion?
I have a few of his movies that I really, really love. The rest of them I really, really hate. I respect the hell out of him as a filmmaker. He does what he wants. And I think anybody who has the balls to do that, it's pretty cool. But like I said, the movies that I really love of his, I really, really love. But then the rest of them are absolute trash garbage to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be in the minority. I love the Fireflies, the Devil's Rejects trilogy. I love the characters. I love the idea of them. But I think, Booms, you're the one that said before that, like, he just falls into this trap of, like, why does everybody have to be like a hillbilly
piece of shit,
abusive piece of shit? Like, why does every character have to have that backstory? It annoys the shit out of me. But I've always really liked his music too. And that's about as opposite from what I normally listen to as you can get. But just as a musician, I think he's just insanely, insanely talented. And I was telling Boomer about this, BP. I have the director's cut DVD of Devil's Rejects. It was a 2-disc set, and the movie was on the first disc, but the second disc was a 2.5-hour long documentary on the making of the film.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it. Annoyingly, I don't have it anymore because I sold all my DVDs, but then I wish I had that, but I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And not just like, I do like to watch the process of a film being made, but just watching him work. He's fascinating.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of my respect for him and his movies, even the ones that I hate, comes from. It's just, it's, he's fascinating to watch.
I think I'm going to be the highest out of everybody on this. And I love how we're getting this dynamic here, how, well, and it's pretty apparent that we are all going to enjoy this film, or that we have all enjoyed this film at some level. But I love how, you know, BP, you come in there and you're like, well, you know, this is the film that I enjoy. I think that is seminal. Rob Zombie, him at the height of his creative powers. And Gabby, I mean, you're kind of along those same lines, but you enjoy him, you know, a little bit more. There's other films in the filmography that you enjoy, but then there's also some that you really fucking hate. And, you know,
hot garbage juice.
Garbage.
Trash.
God damn it. Okay. Well, maybe I should just not give my opinion.
I mean, the thing is, this is the thing. Like, Rob Zombie for me is almost like music. Like, his movies are very much like music. You either like it or you don't. Like, we all know there's a lot of followers, a lot of sheep in the world that just go, oh, somebody likes this, and that means I've got to like it, and so on. But, you know, people like me and you and that, like, you know, we like what we like and fuck it. So with someone like Rob Zombie, it's very much like his music, or his movies are very much like the music, where you can watch it and everyone has their own interpretation of what his movies are. And I don't necessarily mean like maybe the characters or what they're meaning and stuff. I don't really think there's ever like a subliminal message or a different meaning behind everything. I think everything is already there on the screen. But because it's so Rob Zombie, I think that's where people are always having their own interpretation is how they take it. Because he's such, like Gabby was saying, he's so talented. He's so good at what he does. But as a filmmaker, I think like sometimes that doesn't show on the screen, because his craft is with, like I said at the start, it's the style, not necessarily the substance. So you're right to think that if you think everything he does is good, then that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. I'm much higher on Rob Zombie than a lot of people are. There is one film in his filmography that I don't care for, and that's Halloween 2. I can't stand that film. But even that, I even find some merit in some of that film. Like the first, yeah. And Gabby and I've had this conversation before, but like the first,
if the whole film had been the first 10 minutes, it would have been yeah. one of the greatest of all time. Yes, Boomer. It wasn't though.
It wasn't.
The first 10 minutes was not the whole movie. It was trash.
Yeah, and I admit that. I'm just saying I find merit even in something in that film which I don't like and I don't care for. But
and I completely agree with you as well. I think that the first 10 minutes, but I'm like that with Rob Zombie's Halloween. I think the last 20 minutes of Halloween was absolutely phenomenal. The rest of the film I couldn't stand. But the last 20 minutes of Halloween, I watch at on its own sometimes. In fact, I did an Instagram live where we watched the last 20 minutes because it's so good. The rest of it I don't like. And I'm with you with Halloween 2. I think it starts off fantastic. And if it had gone down that route, I think we would have done, you know, Brad Dourif is giving an amazing performance. Scout Taylor Compton's incredible. And then it just goes into fucking White Horses and Mad People and all that shit.
Yeah, WWE Michael Myers.
Yeah, but the thing is as well, once again I have something really controversial as well, because I'm a huge Halloween fan and stuff like that, and Nick Castle did an amazing job with the original, but I actually really like Tyler Mane as Michael Myers, because for me some of the scariest people that we've got in horror are the most intimidating. And what's more intimidating than some guy that's like 200 foot massive like that going after you? There's not really much more terrifying than that. So I actually think he gets a bit of a bad rap because he's in these movies.
No, yeah, I agree with you. I like him. I just don't like homeless Michael Myers, you know, with the beard and everything.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's bollocks. That's all yeah. shit in it.
Yeah. But I think that Rob Zombie honestly has two masterpieces in his filmography. One of them is Lords of Salem, and I have been on record for how much that I love Lords of Salem. And there's one more, and I'm not going to spoil that what it is. It may or may not be this film. We'll see. But I absolutely love that one. But even stuff like 31 and The Munsters, which a lot of people did not like, I find a lot of value and a lot of enjoyability in both of those two. I think they're the greatest things ever. No, but I still enjoy watching them. And so I know that I'm a lot higher than most people on him. And so, Gabby, this is why, like, we've already covered House of a Thousand Corpses, and I was so happy that you put this one on there. So let's roll into that. Gabby, we can start with you first this time if you want. Since this is your film, you brought this one to the table. So take us back. Did you see this when you first, when it first came out? Did you watch this in the theaters? What was your first experience with The Devil's Rejects?
To give my first experience of Devil's Rejects is to recap my first experience with House of a Thousand Corpses. The first time I saw House of a Thousand Corpses, I was in college. My roommate had the DVD. And first watch, I was obsessed. I was a poor college student, waitressing tables. I spent an entire week's tips one day on the House of a Thousand Corpses DVD and a special anniversary edition DVD of Gone with the Wind. One of my favorites, I don't care. And so I watched House of a Thousand Corpses all the time. That was one of my go-to background noise kind of movies. And my then husband, of course, I made him watch that. He hated horror movies. Wonder why it didn't work out.
I wasn't going to make that joke, but I'll allow you to.
We've always got to find that one person that allows us to watch or enjoys horror. If you don't, it's never going to work.
Never going to work. Should have known 18 years ago. But anyway, yeah, he wasn't a big fan, but this was back when I didn't like to go to movies by myself. I always had to have somebody with me. And so when Devil's Rejects came out, I made him go with me. Oh, and there were three other people in the theater on opening day. And at the end of it, even he was like, "That was pretty good." And I was like, "That was fucking amazing. What do you mean?" Like, I was just over the moon. And then, of course, as soon as the DVD came out, I had to go get it. Hello, here's my cat.
Yeah, mine was pretty similar to yours, although I saw House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects in theaters. At that time, well, I mean, still to this day, like, if there is a horror movie released, I do my, like, damnedest to go watch it in the cinema. And when I found out that Rob Zombie, because like you said, BP, I could easily see that transition from his music career to a film career, because everything that he did was so theatrical anyway. You go watch his videos and all that stuff, his stage shows. He's just a very theatrical person. And so I was a fan of his from the White Zombie days, even before he, became Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
So when I found out that he was making a horror movie, I'm like, this is fucking perfect. And then I saw the trailer for House of a Thousand Corpses, love that. And then so this one came out and I'm like, gotta watch it. And I don't know if it was just the night that I went. I think I went, it was like a Wednesday or a Thursday night. So I was the only one in the theater when it had been probably out for a couple of weeks or so at the time. And I went to see this, and yeah, was just absolutely blown away, because again, we sometimes approach film with these certain expectations, and X and Pearl is another good example where, I go into Pearl and I'm thinking, I'm probably going to get, because they were filmed together, that I was going to get like an X2, and that's not what I got. It was kind of the same experience that I got with this. I go into the theater thinking that I'm going to get House of a Thousand Corpses 2, and it's going to be, more camp and more shenanigans and, more Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all that stuff. And completely different movie. This movie is 100%, even it contains the same characters, but even the characters in this film are so wildly different. And I left that theater like just mesmerized and blown away. And And I was kind of the same thing with you, Gabe. It's like, I didn't have anybody to talk about this film. This is, you know, back in the early 2000s. Like, I want to talk about this goddamn movie and nobody, you know, I don't have anybody to talk about it with. But it was amazing. What about you, BP? What was your first experience with this one like?
I was quite similar to you and Gabby as well, because you may or may not know, but the UK is very, very shit in general, but it's also very, very shit for movies, because we just don't get anything. And one thing we don't really get is horror. I don't know why, even though it's mainstream, it's making money for, and it's a little bit different now where they realize and they've cottoned on to the fact that horror makes money. But there was a time when we very, very rarely got anything that anyone wanted to see, especially if it was horror. So when this film came out, luckily enough, I did get to see it at the cinema. So I was really happy about that. But I almost didn't. The only reason I went to see this film is because it was a Rob Zombie movie, because I didn't like House of a Thousand Corpses. I love the originality of the aesthetics of it. I love how it looks and how, but the problem is once again, and I will keep saying it, and this is what, because it's a huge factor in regards to whether I like movies or not, and it's whether it's the style over substance or vice versa. That's my issue. So with someone like Rob Zombie, you don't, and that's why I think Devil's Reject is so good, which I'll go into as well at some point, but that's why I think Devil's Reject works so well, because there's both of those. The House of a Thousand Corpses was one of those films that I watched because I was like, Rob Zombie's making a movie and I fucking can't wait to see it because it's Rob Zombie. And then I watched it and I was very disappointed. And I've watched it like four or five times to try and figure out why. And I still can't. And I think it's purely because I love how it looks. I don't really necessarily like how it plays out. That's pretty much it. So I almost didn't see Devil's Rejects, but it was the fact that it was a Rob Zombie movie that I thought, I best do it because I love him. And so then when I went and watched Devil's Rejects, I was exactly the same as you, Boomer, where I came out of it and I felt that I had watched like a masterpiece, especially at that time, of horror. I felt like I had seen somebody that had transgressed, you know, like it was a natural direction from him, from going House of a Thousand Corpses and then going, I took what I learned from that and now I've taken it to my next film and given it, you know, this broader scope, this broader look, this different feeling. And I thought that that's obviously what we were going to start getting after that. Obviously, you know, for someone like me, we didn't. But from Devil's Rejects, I still like hold it so much higher, not just in regards to like his other movies, but in regards in horror movies in general. It was one of those things that over here in the UK, it was reviewed very, very well. And it was really well, you know, everybody really enjoyed it. There was something weird. It was something different about it and it just worked. So I was sort of happy I got to see it at the cinema, but there's just something that draws you in with that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. There certainly is. And that always blows me away when like, We talk to our UK friends and they're like, we don't get a whole lot of horror, you know, or we haven't until here recently, because some of the most unique horror films have come from the UK, whether you want to, you know, talk about their take on vampirism with the Hammer horror stuff or the even some of the other independent vampire films or zombie films that they were releasing in the 70s, you know, all up into the like the Renaissance in the 90s and the early aughts. It blows me away like that.
Well, like you were saying, Boomer, like this is what's insane about it. Like Pearl is an example. So we did get X. We got X. We got to go and see it at the cinema. Pearl never got a cinema release over here. So we didn't get to see it. Or if they did, it went to the odd cinema for one night only for one showing that no one really got to go and see. So the only time that I got to see it was literally last month when it came out on Blu-ray. So it would have been out for all this time. And I only just got to see it last month. This is why us horror fans over in this country are never happy.
How frustrating is it? Because there's no way that you can avoid spoilers then.
No. Nothing is a surprise at all, especially if you run a whole channel on social media for everything. But yeah, we can't avoid anything. Nothing gets released on the same day or date, same day, unless it's a Marvel movie, which is obviously all shit anyway. So yeah, so we can't avoid anything. It sucks. It really does suck because, you know, we're such a small country, but we've got an awful lot of people here, and there are a lot of fans of horror and the genre, but we get a sort of everything last and get it too late. It's bollocks.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah, Marvel, the horror of the corporate machine, but it's a different kind of horror.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get into the IMDb. So the synopsis for The Devil's Reject says, the murderous backwoods firefighter family take to the road to escape the vengeful Sheriff Wydell, who is not afraid of being as ruthless as his targets. And I enjoy both of the Wydells, but the one that we got in the original. But this one, I'll just go ahead and get into the cast. So this is an amazing amount, and Gabby put this together for me, so thank you, Gabby. But it was funny because
I had to stop. That was the toughest cast to ever, like, okay, who are the most important? Because every character that's in the movie is so important to the plot, but then you have so many cameos from people that maybe aren't super, like, you know, important characters, but they're like fucking PJ Souls. Like, you can't not put her down.
Yeah, like, it's literally, he just like opened up his address book and was just like, who can I get into it? Yeah. Whether it's for 2 seconds or 2 minutes or for the whole film, it's in the casting is insane. And it's also one of those things, as a horror fan, you're like, that's cool. Like, she's in it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, yeah, you're right. Every few minutes, you know, you're like, oh, I know that person, you know, or somebody's just like walking back, you know, walking around back in the background. Like, I would not be surprised if like there's an uncredited cameo by like Robert Englund, you know, just kind of like, oh, I'm here, you know? But yeah, I mean, this is like, I mean, not only is like, this is a who's who in genre work, but I mean, there's just, God, there's so many. So of course we've got the wonderful, and rest in peace, my dude, Sid Haig, as Captain Spaulding, Bill Moseley, Sherry Moon Zombie, Leslie Easterbrook, Matthew McGorry, William Forsythe.
Also rest in peace.
Yeah, I know. Rest in peace as well. Dave Sheridan and
love Tom, Dave Sheridan.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, he's so amazing. Tom Knowles. I love Tom Knowles. Ken Foray.
Legend.
He is such a special actor to me. I don't know what it is.
I got to meet him not long ago as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. Right.
Yeah, yeah. I got to meet the top three original cast of Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, wow.
The original 1978 Dawn of the Dead, and Ken Foray. When you meet people, and basically he is a big, big guy, and it's surprising how big he is. Like, his hands were like catcher's mitts. It was in absolute, he's a big, big guy, and it was amazing seeing, but he's also one of those guys that, you know, he's truly like honored to be part of everything that he was a part of. And then he gets to do what he does. So now he gets to go around meeting people, and he continues to do what he does and ends up in pretty much every Rob Zombie movie anyway. So he's done all right there. And my daughter loves Rob Zombie as well. So when she got to meet him, I ended up, as usual, met him and stuff like that. And I paid for his autograph and stuff like that, because I got a big poster signed by all of them. And my daughter got one for free. So this is why I take her everywhere now. She gets it all for free.
That's so awesome. I love that.
Now, Booms, before we keep going, did you notice Dave Sheridan?
What was that in reference to?
Shout out to our good friend Harrison Smith. That's Mike from the special.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that...
I didn't realize that until I was doing the research, and I was like, that mullet. For anybody who looks at Dave Sheridan's IMDb page, that mullet is so familiar, and I know I remember that from somewhere, and I looked it up, and I was like, holy shit, I've seen this movie 100 times, and I didn't realize that was him in the special.
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
Douchebag boyfriend from Bubble Boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's the douchebag boyfriend in Bubble Boy with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Is he always
Well,
playing
he's
the
got a good
douchebag?
face.
Always, and always with a mullet, apparently.
I mean, if you can pull it off,
Why
God bless.
not?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm halfway done. I'm halfway done. I promise. This whole
Oh, shut
movie.
up now.
Yeah, no. I was just gonna say this whole episode is not going to be the IMDb, I promise. But so, we have Geoffrey Lewis, Priscilla Barnes, and then of course, like some of these amazing cameos. Danny Trejo. I fucking love Danny Trejo. And
So good.
yeah, he shows up as like the henchman and you know that third act, which is just awesome.
He's
Diamond
good
Dallas
in
Page
it.
is in this movie. Yes,
He's
he
really
is.
good in it.
So good.
And he looks so
Like,
scary.
I thought he was going to be shit. I thought he was going to be like typical wrestler, come in, be really bad. But he's good. He plays intimidating. He plays crazy. He does a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, he's phenomenal in it. PJ Souls, like you mentioned, Gabby. Of course, Michael Berryman, Ginger Lynn, Kane Hodder, and Brian Posehn. I think is how you say that. Hopefully that's pretty correct. I'm usually
Posehn.
terrible. Okay. I'm usually terrible with names, but
I don't even know if anybody knows who Brian Posehn is. He's a stand-up comedian and he's really funny. I know him because I like his comedy. I put it in. If anybody doesn't recognize the name, I just like him. I don't know.
And I'm sure you said it as well, but Tyler Mayne's there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is insane. So he's you know, he loves shoving him in movies as well.
This is awesome. Yeah, I love this. All right, so let's talk about the scores a little bit. So IMDb has this rated as a 6.7 out of 10, which kind of seems low, but for IMDb, that's actually that's actually pretty good. The one that got me out of all of these is the Rotten Tomatoes critic score, which is at 55%. I don't get that. Like, I understand that this may not be a film for everyone. I understand this has some hyper violence. There are some uncomfortable things and themes that happen in this, but still, like 55%. I mean, that seems like, does that seem a bit low to you guys, or is that just like me?
No,
I think, yeah, I think it's low. I think it's low.
I don't. It's horror. Anything
well,
over
yeah,
the 40%, I'm always like pleasantly surprised they got something that high. So, no. The 78%, sorry to step on your...
No, you're good.
There, but the 78% audience score, that surprised me that many people liked it.
Okay. I wasn't surprised by that because, I mean, this kind of appeals... I mean, like I said, even though... By Rob Zombie's second film, you kind of know what you're going into. So I don't think that, Mary was taking her, like, 10-year-old to see The Devil's Rejects and like, oh my God, what the fuck is this? You know?
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
A lot of small towns in America.
Well, I shouldn't say that because I did go see X. I think it was 7 times if my count was right. And the first time that I went, yes, there was a family there that had like 2 young kids. And I'm like, what the fuck are you
That's
doing?
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's in fucking insane, isn't it?
It is always wild. Yeah. So I shouldn't be surprised by anything, but that was just a little low to me just because I understand, the critics are not always the biggest horror fans, but I don't know, just to me, this like has so much going on. And we'll get like right into some of those aspects. So like the cinematography in this is like outstanding. And you know, something that Gabby, pointed out as, a kind of like a wraparound or, kind of inspiration for this movie is like the old Westerns where, I mean, this is bookended by, a big shootout. I mean, we have the classic Western siege at the beginning, of this film. And then, it ends with them going out in like a blaze of glory and all that stuff. And
yeah.
It's, you have the that desert landscape, and these are like outlaws who are on the run from this, you know, from this force of nature, you know, sheriff and all that stuff. And so, you know, Gabby kind of pointed that out to me. Did you notice that, BP? Was that something that did you make that association, or did you was there something else that stuck out to you?
Well, it was, hang on, I've got it in my notes here as well. I've actually got that in my notes. But one of the things that it makes me, I probably won't be able to find it now. But basically, this film, I can't find it, ignore it. But basically, it is very much like a Western, exactly like a Western, like you were saying, which makes it really interesting, bearing in mind that it is horror. So, you know, other than that, you think of other Westerns that define themselves as like something that could be seen as a horror, is like Bone Tomahawk or something like that. So it's interesting to have that as part of the genre. So yeah, it does feel like a Western. I think William Forsythe, I always get his name wrong because I think it's someone else Forsythe, but William Forsythe, he feels like a very old school, you know, villain that you would get, you know, that would come into a Western town and start causing shit. But his role's almost reversed in this because he's the guy that's supposed to be keeping the peace, which obviously he's doing a really shit job at. So it feels like it, but it also feels like that this is almost like Rob Zombie's Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Or anything like that, where these characters are, as we know from House of Thousands of Corpses, they are larger than life. You know, like to me, they don't feel like characters that would actually be or belong in the real world. But yeah, he integrates them into this thing. And that's, I think that's why, one of the reasons why this film really works, because the setting itself and the way the film looks, and I think that where it still feels very old school, like it feels very 70s, this movie, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff, that I think that having those characters that are a little bit larger than life integrated into this movie with the look of the movie, it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about that. It's, I mean, there is such you know, a strange dichotomy at some times between but it does, like it absolutely works. I love that. What about you, Gabby? I know that you like pointed this out to me, but is that something that you always noticed? Like, did you pick that up, or was that like subsequent watches, you know, the Western theme?
No, well, I think the first few viewings was more of just being so shocked that it was such a tonal change and it still worked. And it worked better than the first. If House of a Thousand Corpses had been filmed this way, it would not have worked. And I love the idea, and I've said this for years and years and years. I've never read anything where Rob Zombie said anything like this, but I wasn't really paying attention to like the whole Western idea. It was more of the dreamlike atmosphere of House of a Thousand Corpses, and then the gritty reality of the Devil's Rejects, that they were living in this dream that they can take whoever they want, rape whoever they want, kill whoever they want, do whatever they want. It doesn't matter. They're in their own little world, their own little bubble. And then the bubble bursts in the beginning of Devil's Rejects. And now it's that gritty, dirty, scary, very bright. It went from a very dark and vivid, almost psychedelic palette in the first film to something that was just almost too bright. It was too awake. That's what hit me at first. And then I actually just came up with the Western thing when I was doing the notes for this.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It's always so. When I was a kid, I had an uncle who had movies, and he was obsessed with Westerns. So I ended up watching a lot of them, and a lot of like Clint Eastwood and all that sort of stuff when I was younger. And but this, yeah, it straight away, like from the opening scene, you know, from the shootout at the start and everything, where it's always, because typical movie stuff, that everybody is the worst shot in the entire world because they've got semi-automatics or automatics, everything like that, shooting everywhere. And I think you only see like one cop get shot, like, you know, that's pretty much it. And then everybody else is hiding behind a car getting missed. But yeah, like, it's interesting because, yeah, throughout the whole film, it has those Western elements to it, but on a completely sort of different idea of character that's set around it. It's just so weird. It's just a weird film because it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah, and I never put that together until I until you pointed that out to me. All right, so yeah, the way that I took this one in the first film, and we keep making references to the first film, but that was kind of in my view Rob Zombie, and of course Rob Zombie's take on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so he drew inspiration from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and kind of made it his own thing. Where when I watched this film, it was like those old 70s grindhouse movies. That's just, there are things in it that's just, you know, gross and visceral. A lot of times it's bright, it's set in the daylight. So that, you know, they're not hiding away from anything, any of the violence that's taking place on screen. And so I kind of like, that's the way that I took this, was it's kind of like Rob Zombie's take on those old grindhouse exploitation films.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. You're right. I think, you know, yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. That's exactly, I suppose, what it is. But also, I don't know, it's just weird. It's just the interpretation that you can take from this movie. That's what I love. I mean, that's why films like this are the films that, you know, we still talk about and want to talk about, and we still want to watch these movies, because the interpretation you take, like, I'll get into it at some point or whenever you want me to, of what I don't like about this movie and the problems that I have with this movie, even though I think it's a 5-star horror. As usual, I'm so overly critical of everything that I watch. Like you said, like, because I watch films as like from a filmmaking or an acting perspective, I look at things so differently and I'm overanalyzing everything. And that's why I think sometimes there might be things in Rob Zombie movies that I really don't like a lot because it doesn't work for me. Whereas something in Devil's Rejects just made it all work. Like I said, it shouldn't. But it is, you're exactly right. It's like a grindhouse. It's like, you know, has a feeling of those old school grindhouse movies. It has that sort of feeling with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where these characters are larger than life. It's got this feeling of a Western all mixed in. It just felt like that every idea that he had for this movie, or the predominantly 90% of the ideas he had for this movie, it works, and it worked better than it should have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of the characters, and we touched on it before, that these characters, even like same names, they're the same characters in a way, but they're represented like and written really, really differently than what we got in House of a Thousand Corpses. So like, do you enjoy spending time with these characters, even though, I mean, they're like reprehensible people, but as far as like not spending time with them, like, hey, would you like to hang out with a firefly family? Because that'd be a good old time. But like, you know, do you enjoy, you know, watching this family on screen? And which one is your favorite?
So this is where it gets difficult, because my biggest problem with Rob Zombie is how he tries to make people almost care about disgusting people. And people that do the wrong things. And he almost tries to make you feel empathetic towards these people by giving them the main element of the film. Like, the story is built around these horrible people doing horrible things. And throughout the films, the things that, you know, things are happening to him, like in Devil's Rejects, things keep happening to them that aren't good things. Now, if these were good people, you would be like, this sucks. But they're not good people, and they're very, very bad people. And that, to me, is the worst thing about Rob Zombie and his movies, because he constantly creates people that I don't like. Yeah. Apart from Ken Foray in this, and he's fantastic, but he constantly creates characters that I despise. And that makes it quite difficult that's why in the end of it, I'm like, I'm happy they're dead. and obviously they weren't. We know what happened next, but I was happy that it, you know, that I was hoping that that was going to be the end of them, because he, you know, and we see it in every movie, he just, it feels like he enjoys putting in these horrible people And I don't know whether it's one of those things where he puts them into movies to make us feel bad for watching it. But I don't know. I just don't like it. I've never liked it. So yeah, I find it really difficult because, and to say which one's my favorite, then it's always going to be Otis. Because he, yeah, it's Bill Moseley, you know, and he's cool as fuck. But he's basically Charles Manson, you know?
Oh yeah.
He's basically Charles Manson, who is a piece of shit. So he plays that really well. If he's playing a piece of shit, he plays it really well. But yeah, so I really struggle with any Rob Zombie movie to like the characters because they're all dicks.
Yeah, it's almost like Rob Zombie is punishing the audience by making you sit through, you know, sit at the dinner table with these every character who's just absolutely horrible.
Hate how they talk as well. Like, just, you know, I'm not even going to say the words, and I like swearing, but I'm not even going to say the words because he just loves it. And it almost feels like to me that, so we all know, like Quentin Tarantino, he has his very own, very stylistic Quentin Tarantino dialogue. And it works for his movies, but a lot of people always try and replicate it and then it doesn't work. And I feel that that's almost like what Rob Zombie does in a lot of his movies, where there's so many scenes that are very script heavy and these characters are saying words or describing things that we just wouldn't in real life. And then for me, it takes you out of it because these characters within Devil's Rejects is a very real looking movie and the aesthetic is very real. And I would probably say it's the most real sort of out of his movies he's ever made, but these characters aren't real and they take you out of it because there's so many dialogue, long pieces of dialogue in certain things where they just talk and say nasty things. And I'm like, stop being rude.
Yeah. I completely get that. Like, I think, and I've said it before, but I think that Rob Zombie would really, really benefit by having a co-writer, somebody that he respects,
yeah,
and you know, that is not afraid to tell him,
and is not Sherry Moon.
There should be more giggling in this scene. I don't know why. No, but yeah, I've always, as much as I like his stories and stuff, that his dialogue is a lot of times is pretty atrocious. And yeah, he definitely would benefit from just a little bit of editing there, just a little bit, Rob, if you're listening to the show.
Hi. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any complaints. I'm your biggest fan.
No, you heard me. Yeah, friend of the show, Rob Zombie. Gabby, what about you? I know that you enjoy both of these movies, but they're so wildly different. Like, did you like that, or was that like off-putting? And like, you know, what did you think about spending time with the characters in this film in particular? And, you know, who is your favorite, if you have one?
Well, no, I didn't have an issue with the characters' personalities changing a bit because, again, the first thing that I picked up on the first time I watched it was the tonal shift. So it automatically became, you know, I mean, I'm sure maybe you guys have, if you have, that's cool. I mean, just speaking as like, you know, when you're a little girl and you have a dream that you're a fairy princess or something like that, and then you wake up and you have to get ready for school. Like, so it didn't bother me that the characters' personalities changed so much because, of course, it was a dream and now they're awake. And also the fact that in the first film, because they are so sheltered and they are so protected from the world, them being thrust out into the world, they can't be themselves because everything that they've known as reality isn't reality. And now they're in reality and they don't know who the hell they are anymore. B, just the fact that, you know, we can all be who we are at home, but you can't. Most of the stuff that we do at home, we can't do in public. My favorite character, mine is a tie between Captain Spaulding and Mother Firefly. Because I love the dichotomy in both of them, that they are ruthless, disgusting, vile creatures, but don't they love their family?
I was just about to say that.
Captain Spaulding, yeah, Captain Spaulding is willing to do whatever he can to protect baby. That's all he's worried about in the whole film, is just making sure the baby's going to be okay. And Mother Firefly is willing to take the fall. For, I don't think she did a lot of the crimes at the house. I think she was more of just kind of a face for the family. I obviously, she's evil because she doesn't have a problem with it. And she probably encourages a lot of that behavior. But when it comes down to it, at least from what we saw in House of a Thousand Corpses, most of that stuff is being done by Baby and Otis.
Maybe she was like administration.
Maybe a little bit RJ.
She was probably administration, working. She knew the books. I mean, she knew, you know, William Forsythe's brother, you know, she knew from the name. So she's probably, you know, maybe that was her previous job. She was, you know, in bookkeeping, something like that.
Yeah.
In charge of purchasing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We're out of rope.
That's it. We need some more metal suits.
But yeah, I think those are my two faves.
Nice. I'm gonna cheat a little bit because I am going to. My favorite in the first one was Baby. I really enjoyed just that kind of like gleeful, unhinged nature that she brought to the film. In this one, it's a cheat. I'll let y'all comment on it if you want to. But my favorite is Sheriff. You know, William Forsythe in this film is incredible.
But the question was, who's your favorite Firefly?
All right. So my favorite Firefly is Captain Spaulding.
Okay. Now tell us why you love the Sheriff.
Okay. So so the Sheriff, it's just an incredible piece of acting. It's one of the best, most captivating performances that I've seen in horror. Maybe, you know, in any genre, like ever. It's incredible. Like in this film, and we'll get into that scene because you can't talk about this movie without talking about that scene. But as scary and disgusting and stuff as everybody else, and I'm watching all this, the person that I'm actually most afraid of in this entire movie is the Sheriff.
Well, he has nothing to lose. He already lost everything.
Yeah. And it goes back to the whole, like I was saying, the whole Michael Myers and Tyler Mane sort of stuff. It's intimidation, you know. Sometimes when watching horror films, the scariest things isn't necessarily what we see, it's what we feel. And someone like Michael Myers, for example, the fact that we don't know anything about him, we don't know why he does it. Obviously, we do now because loads of shit came out afterwards. But if we're purely basing it on the original, you know, what's intimidating is that of who he is. And that's what is the scary thing, because you don't know. And that happens throughout in different ways within horror, that there's so many, you know, like Pinhead, for example. You know, he's incredibly skinny. I'm pretty sure I could probably beat the shit out of him, but he's incredibly intimidating still. So, you know, that's the thing with the Sheriff in this, is that I think William Forsythe plays him so well, because on an actor standpoint, you completely 100% believe that he is that person that he is portraying on screen. He's not portraying a person. He's that person. But it's the intimidating factor of him going once again to the lengths that he has to, whether they're right or not. That's what's cool.
Yeah, it's like that abuse of authority and power. It's like, you know, yeah, the Fireflies are evil and stuff like that, but it's like you feel like you could kind of avoid them unless you're unlucky. But it's like there's that thing about law enforcement where it's like, you know, basically, they could do whatever they want to you. And that's so it's so fucking scary to me.
Yeah.
So we'll get into, like I said, kind of hinted at this. We'll get into that scene where they take the band captive in the hotel room. And there's like there is just so much going on in that, where there's this sexual assault with that Otis does with the handgun. But I mean, there's the violence when people are getting killed. You know, they make the guy march off into the desert and all this stuff. But a lot of the scariest parts of that is like the power that they wield, and the fear that they instill in this family. Like, what were your thoughts? And Gabby, we'll start off with you this time. Like, what were your thoughts on this particular act? Do you think that maybe some of the violence was unnecessary, or was it necessary for this film to tell this story?
That's hard to answer. Yes, the violence is necessary to tell the story of the Firefly family, because the Firefly family is violent. They are ruthless. They don't care. They're evil. So the violence is kind of, yeah, it's needed maybe to show that, like, they don't flinch. We're not going to flinch. We're going to make you watch it. He did a really, really good job with incorporating a little bit of psychological horror into this, because, you know, especially as a woman, that rape scene. Oh, I mean, the amount of humiliation. I mean, a sexual assault, whether it's somebody grabbing your boob unwanted or actually full on raping you, say with a handgun, it's humiliating. It's degrading. And I mean, I'm sure that to some level you guys could put yourselves into a woman's shoes, but as a woman seeing that and knowing that that's reality, that I, you know, I listen to a lot of true crime. Men do a lot of stuff to us, especially serial killers, serial rapists, things like that. So that part right there, that was just, it was so agonizing, because you can really feel for her. I mean, I can't, if you get down to the bare bones of sexual assault, I doubt that you will find a woman on this planet who has never been sexually assaulted. I have big boobs and I have a good ass. I've had strangers slap it, grab my boobs, pull my shirt down, pull my shirt up. You know, it's just kind of something that we're all so used to. But then there's that barrier that, like, well, most of us haven't been raped. And that gun scene is just like, holy shit, that could actually happen. And then to have her doing that in front of other people. So not only are you being humiliated by your captor, but also these are people that you know. And to be one of the people that's in the room while it's happening to her and knowing that you have no power, that also is just heart-wrenching. So that whole scene, that just, God, and then the things that he makes her say, and you know that she's not that type of person. And when the husband, what's his first name?
Oh, now I have to look it up.
Oh, shit.
What's his name? I always forget it. But the guy, yeah, I know you mean. The guy that's the band, you know, the singer in the band and that.
Roy.
I always forget his name.
Yeah.
Roy. That's it.
Covers his eyes. It's just, I mean, that scene, it's incredibly sad. But I think that's so necessary, because, like, did you not pick up on how evil they were in the first film? Well, have we got something for you? And then when Otis takes Roy and whatever the other guy's name is out, that's another part that's really psycho. It reminds me of the scene with the deputy in House of 1,000 Corpses, when you have that sweeping upshot and he's just holding the gun to the back of the guy's head and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and that suspense builds and it's so fucking delicious. But this suspense is so much longer. And whereas it was completely silent in House of 1,000 Corpses with the deputy, in this one, that Otis is talking so much and you're getting so much insight into how angry he is. And you're just wondering, where is that anger coming from? Why are you taking it on a country Western band? You know, that you're just mad at everyone. And then to cut back and forth between that and Baby, and Baby's just a dick. She's not mad at anybody. She's just an asshole. Like, just the way that she treats the women and the things that she does and the mind games that she plays, she's just an asshole. And that is when any kind of likability that Baby had for me, especially in the beginning of this movie, when it seemed like she was really like, oh my God, what do we do? I need my dad. We need to get out of here. And she seemed like she was panicked. No, she wasn't. She doesn't give a shit what happens to her.
And she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I mean, that could have been the entire film. And then the third film could have been them getting caught by Wydell and that whole thing. I mean, he could have split that and then we wouldn't have had Three from Hell, which I did like, but not that great.
All right. Yeah, it's famously not up to the quality of the
I'm not even going to say anything about it. I'm just going to forget that
you don't have something nice to say, then just don't say anything. But
exactly.
All right, BP, what about you? Like, this is that scene that, you know, I mean, it gets referenced all the time. There are some movies that have that, and this one certainly does. Do you think it goes too far, or is it necessary, or, you know, what are your thoughts on this one?
I feel that, so a lot of the time when people making films or have ideas and so on like that, a lot of the time there's ideas that they have that formulate the rest of it. And I feel that there's two parts to this film, or two scenes in this film, that Rob Zombie knew that he wanted to do, and that essentially made the rest of the movie around it. And I think the ending, the fact that he probably thought, I want them in a car getting shot up with three birds, everything like that, I'm pretty sure that that's something where he was like, this is what, that was probably his first idea as a filmmaker, saying, this is what I want to happen to them, this is how, and so on. And then I feel that this is a scene that's in there purely because, once again, when you're making horror, when you're making films like this, you want to have something in a film that stands out, that people don't forget, that people remember. And that's what I think that this film, this scene is. But I don't like it. And the reason that I don't is that I've been someone that is, and unfortunately, I'm against something that happens in horror far too often, and that's sexual, you know, anything, sexual assaults or anything like that towards women, men, anything like that within horror. It happens too much. It happens. And I don't like it because you can depict violence, you can depict anger, you can depict frustration. You can depict anything you can, but you can do that through words, you can do that by anything else, but you don't always have to show it. And I think, like Gabby's saying as well, yes, it is necessary to establish or continue to establish the evil of the Firefly, you know, family and so on. But do we need to see it, and do we need to see it in the way that it's done? And that's what I struggle with this movie. And that's, as I said, I still love this movie. I mean, you know, I think it's fantastic. But do I think it's like fantastic because of all the other films that I don't like that he's done? But this scene is like one of those scenes that stands out to me, going, you didn't need to, and I don't know if you should have. Does it look fantastic cinematically? Yes. You know, he keeps on using slow-mo shots within this film really often, and I like it because he's not just using it on purpose, he's using it to add impact. So if it's somebody trying to run out the door with somebody's face on their face, you know, he's using slow-mo because the delivery of the impact on that scene is integral to you as a viewer. And he does that really well. You know, when somebody's trying to escape, it slows down. Or if they're trying to stab somebody, it slows down because he's trying to, you know, make the impact more harsh and make you feel more for those people that they're doing it to. So he does a really good job in this scene at doing that. You can't fault any of the performances in it because you genuinely believe that these actions, these horrible things that are happening on screen that you're watching, are happening and could happen and do happen. So it's a tough scene to watch, but I find it difficult to get over the fact that it's a tough scene to watch because he put it in there on purpose because he knew that it had to be, and he knew that it would be a scene that we're here in 2023 still talking about.
I mean,
a really good point. When you compare, like, horror movies of today to horror movies of, like, way back, King Kong, you know, shit like that, it was just, like, shocking. Wow, my God, this is insane. And, you know, like, you know that something's really effective because of how far, I mean, there's been way worse that have come out since this.
Look at the sadness. If you've seen the sadness, yeah, that's fucked up.
Fucked up. Yeah. I mean, so, and we're still talking about this. That's how effective it is.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if we watched this in 1944.
Yeah.
We'd have all had heart attacks and shit our pants.
There'd be a lot of suits at the dry cleaners.
Yeah.
All right. This is like my thoughts on it. So, I kind of feel like it does need to be there in a way. And I'm kind of with you know, you guys, like, where it is overused. Now, I completely 100% in agreement with that, where it's just some, you know, some kind of device, some storytelling device or motivation tactic and stuff like that. And it's, that's bullshit. And I hate that when that happens. And this, I do feel it's necessary. And the reason I do is I think this is kind of like the Patrick Bateman effect is what I'll call it. So you have so many people that watch American Psycho and love Patrick Bateman. You're not supposed to love Patrick Bateman. Yeah, I mean, he's a terrible person doing terrible, terrible things. And, you know, the Firefly family in the first movie is so kind of campy and over the top that there's like, to me, and maybe this is just to me, but there's like this certain distance between me and the actions that they are committing on screen because, you know, because of the way that it's shot and filmed and kind of the tone of that film. And even in this, like you're let in here, you know, and you have a big shootout. We talked about it at the very beginning. You might think, oh man, you know, all this stuff is badass. And then the movie slows down and it's saying, no, you cannot be on board with these people. Like you cannot identify with these people. This is complete evil that we're dealing with here. And so I think that is so effective in as terrible as it is. And I don't like watching it. But I think that it's an effective way to bring that realization to the audience, you know, that and some of them that may have not gotten it before, that this is, you know, there's nobody to root for in these people. And so I for me, that's why it is. But yeah, it is a hard scene. I remember the first time that I saw this, like, and it seems like it lasts so long. And it was like when it was done, like I just had to kind of sit back and take a breath. It is so horrible.
Oh, I was just saying this scene's like exhausting, so to speak. You know, like you were saying, like, but it's interesting, like you were saying, because you talking about Patrick Bateman, and I think what I find really interesting is, once again, this is why I love these movies, especially horror, because it's interpretation, and that's because I hate Patrick Bateman. I love the movie and I find him interesting, but I absolutely hate Patrick Bateman because I can take myself outside of this world that you're watching and just know that these people are a piece of shit. And I'm like that with serial killers as well. You know, do I have loads of books behind me about them? And like, is it the psychological side of going, yeah, look, we all get angry and we all do these, you know, we see somebody in the shop and somebody pisses us off. Do I want to punch them in the face? Yes. But what makes somebody then go, oh, I hate this person so much that I want to cut off their head and put it in a freezer and all that sort of stuff. And that's scary. But that's what I don't understand. That's the interesting part of what this, you know, is interesting, because we don't know why. And that's why I think it's quite scary. So on, he's not knowing why. And it's all down to that. But I don't like these characters in this movie, and you're right, it is necessary in this movie for this scene to be in here to establish, like you're saying, how evil they are, and then go, right, you're not supposed to root for these people, and if at any point you thought you were supposed to, you're wrong. But there's a fine line, and I think there's a lot of people that like these characters out there, and I don't think they should because they're nasty people and they do horrible things and they're not real because it's a movie, but these things obviously do happen. So it's difficult because, as I said, when I watch these movies, if somebody's supposed to be a bad person, I think they're a bad person and I find it difficult to follow them on their journey if I know they're a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Gabby, what were you going to say?
I don't remember.
Oh, sorry.
We'll get into, and I know that we've touched on it here or there, but some of the negatives that you have for this film and BP, we'll start with you. And, you know, you've kind of hinted at some of the negativity, but what are some of the negatives of this film for you?
Definitely. I just think it's my biggest problem is, as I said, he's the same problem with every Rob Zombie movie. And I've already said it, so I won't go into too much. He's just his constant love for bad people and making bad people do bad things and letting you see it and making them say things that they don't need to. And I think that that is his biggest flaw. I think it's very, very, I can't think of the word, but I can't even think of the word because I'm a dumb Englishman, so I'm not very clever with words. But I think as a filmmaker, he's a fantastic filmmaker. And what I keep saying to people is that I wish Rob Zombie would not make a Rob Zombie movie. And it's never going to happen because I really enjoy his creativity, because the fact that he's so... I'm Rob Zombie and I want to make a Rob Zombie movie. And sometimes that works, but sometimes it doesn't. And he puts this into every movie. And that's why it sucks for me, because I can see the potential in him as a filmmaker. Like I said, Halloween, didn't like it. The last 20 minutes, absolutely amazing, because I saw that I felt like he delivered on his potential that he has. And this movie does, out of every film that he's done, 100% delivers on so much of that potential. It's way better aesthetically because it feels more real and it feels like it fits his style of filmmaking better. But the negatives, annoyingly, are the things that are the negatives in every Rob Zombie movie. And that sucks, because I don't want his legacy to be he's fizzled out because everybody's sick of Rob Zombie movies. I want him to make a movie that, like you're saying, has somebody helping him with a script. Because I don't even necessarily think his scripts are all that bad. It's just the way that he's getting people to tell them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that sucks. I think the music in it as well isn't great, in regards to the music itself is in the songs that he used, I absolutely love. Like, I literally have that. I have that on a playlist, just all the songs that are in this film. It's amazing. And I love it.
Ever.
Yeah. It's so good. And it just works and it fits the music, the movie, it fits the tone. It's amazing. But the music itself feels a bit of out of place. I feel like they could have done like a bigger, grander score for this sort of movie, especially when it comes to the gunfights and stuff. It didn't really work for me so much. So that there are things, and obviously, once again, you know, the whole scene with the worst sort of violence that you don't necessarily need to see. But like I'm saying, like you said, you know, there's a reason for it. They depict them and they're trying to depict them as the worst people you can think of and you can see. But it's sometimes how he does things. And in that scene, I wasn't too keen on. So, but I mean, that's not too many. It's just quite big things. Yeah. It's just quite big things. That's the problem.
Yeah. Gabby, what about you? Any negatives with the Devil's Rejects?
I think Wydell just gets a little too rootin' tootin' for me. A little much after a while. It's like, we get you pissed. Okay. I don't need preaching. He preaches a lot. I don't care for that. I wish that we had had more Charlie. I loved him. He was awesome. I could have watched a spinoff movie about him and his little brothel, his little Western town brothel.
He's so cool.
He was so cool. I want to be a pimp.
And also, I do have to say as well, because I always forget her name, but it's the lady in it that I think it's Candy, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
She's so fucking cool. I love her. I love her voice. I love I'm talking about, like, obviously the actress as well that I always forget her name. I believe she does do the voice of, like, Harley Quinn, and that's, like, perfect for her because she sounds just like, and is like the epitome of what, like, you imagine a real life Harley Quinn to be. But she's only in this film for a little bit, and obviously she's in Rob Zombie 31 as well, I believe. But she's so cool in it as well.
She's got a great presence. She is only in for like one or two scenes, but damn it, does she kill it.
Yeah
She was also in an episode of Friends.
I did really? Not know that.
Mm-hmm. she played Phoebe's old singing partner, writing partner, remember? And she
yeah.
He wants to market Smelly Cat.
Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, that's her.
I never would have put that together. All right, Gabby.
Well, you got me.
Yeah, exactly. You bring all the trivia. That's amazing. There is no way that I'm thinking Phoebe. All right, Gabby, any other negatives that you have for it?
No, just Wydell. Shut up.
Okay. I mean, I kind of agree with you, like, as much as like I said, that I like that character, he does kind of become like this cartoon towards the end of the movie. Yeah, you get a little over the top. And that's kind of where my negatives lie, is like you were saying also, BP, kind of the Rob Zombiness of it all. Like there's just this lack of restraint in the film. And it's like there's so many good ideas. And Gabby, I think you even said that this could have been like two movies, where it could have been, you know, the one and the chase and all this stuff, and then, you know, the next one could have been the capture and the brothel and all this stuff. It does. It kind of seems like just two different films were just smashed together, because he does. He has all these wonderful ideas just bouncing around in his head, and he's like, "Fuck it, let's just do it all." And so there
probably
is,
because,
like,
he thinks that he never make a film ever again, so he puts it all in one.
I better get it out now. That's good. Maybe that's actually spot on, and this was a necessary evil for him. But yeah, it's just that the lack of restraint, where everything just seems to go on like a few beats too long, whether it's you know, the dialogue, or there's certain scenes. I understand that there's like this artistic aspect to it, but it just seems like it's just too much. This film is almost, for me, and it's crazy to say, but it's like a super indulgent cake, right? It's delicious and wonderful, but you have a couple of bites of that and you're like, okay, that's enough. You know, I don't need any more of this. And you know, Rob Zombie just keeps shoving that shit in your face, like, no, eat more fucking cake, bitch. So that's kind of my issue with the films. I think everything's done so well, but there's just a little bit, there's too much. There's just way too much of everything, and it kind of gets a little convoluted there towards that last act.
I mean, I'm never going to be able to eat cake again without thinking of Rob Zombie shoving it in my face. But I think it's because I think the problem is I think he thinks, I sometimes I feel that there's like an arrogance to it sometimes, and I don't think necessarily he's like an arrogant person. I mean, I've seen all the interviews and stuff like that. I don't know what it is, but I feel like sometimes it's like he's trying to make his stamp as a filmmaker like some of the greats, you know, like I've mentioned Quentin Tarantino, and I'm not even a massive fan of Tarantino, but what he does within his realm and his world, it works, and he has his own sort of thing. And that's what I'm saying, like, you are completely right, because sometimes it feels like he has to fit so much Rob Zombie into something, whether it's the dialogue or a scene, that it overstays its welcome and lessens the impact of it. Like Wydell, I completely agree with you. Like, he's such a good character, and William Forsythe is so good. But he's so, like Gabby is saying, so preachy, that there's so much dialogue that he gets through, and the way that he's doing it, because Rob Zombie's like writing it, that it doesn't need to it. And then you feel like he's less of a real person, because once again, people in real life, not everyone talks like, I'm sure there's people in the world that do talk like that, but they don't always talk like this. And it just keeps going and going on, and escalates and escalates until the point where you're like, well, he's almost like a caricature now, like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He needs to hold back on the Rob Zombiness.
Yeah. I agree with that. One thing that I want to touch on that we did not is the replacement of Leslie Easterbrook for Karen Black as Mother Firefly in the second one. I think a lot of people have negative feelings about that. I loved her. I liked her better than Karen Black. She took that role and she fucking ran with it. And as far as I'm concerned, that monologue when she's being interrogated and she loses her shit, that is right up there with, no matter how many times I've seen it, it still gives me chills, as Hereditary dining room scene. Like, she just, that is one of the best that I've ever seen.
Well, I was going to ask this, but then it might be a question that you've got, Boomer. You might already have this question, but I was going to say that what my favorite scene is, that a question that you've got, because I don't want to step on.
No, I don't. I was right, actually about to wrap us up. So go ahead. You can talk about
that. Sorry. Sorry, I was just going to ask what your favorite scenes in the movie, because you were talking about the interrogation scene, and my favorite scene in the movie is quite a small scene, but it's the impact that it has because it's unpredictable. It's the scene where Wydell stabs Mother Firefly. Like, that's my favorite scene within the movie because it's so unpredictable that I just didn't see that coming. I just thought, you know, that was the point where, you know, you're like, he's definitely unhinged. He's more like the Firefly than we actually knew or he thought. So that's like sort of my favorite scene within the movie is the fact is when he stabs her. I didn't expect that.
I think that scene also is great because the last thing that we see of Mother Firefly is the extent of what a sick asshole she is, that she comes.
Yeah.
Being stabbed. I mean, she got right off on that. And, you know, so maybe she doesn't do as much of the killing, but she sure does love the...
She enjoys it.
About it.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I actually, and I don't know why, but I think Leslie Easterbrook is a better actress, just overall. She really is. But I kind of preferred the Karen Black, because I prefer the campiness a little bit to this more grounded reality that Rob Zombie's presented. So I do enjoy Karen Black more than I do Leslie Easterbrook, even though I will fully admit she is a much better, objectively, a much better Mother Firefly. But my favorite is the end, the very end of this. And I'll tell you why it is. And it's not, you know, necessarily the free bird or all this, you know, and all this stuff, or, you know, how kind of epic it is. And I mean, it really is in a way, but it was my favorite scene because it was so cathartic, because I hated these fucking people. I hated them. And I'm like, after all that, you've got to be fucking shitting me, Rob Zombie. After all that, they're just going to drive away. I'm like, no, you don't get to do it. You know, I like, like I understood at the reason why House of a Thousand Corpses ended the way that it did. And I love that. I love the downer ending in that one because of the tone that movie set. But I'm like, you're setting this in fucking reality. There's got to be some goddamn consequences for the actions of these people. And I was so fucking mad in that theater, you know. And then like they stop and there's the roadblock. And I'm like, fuck yeah, fuck yeah, fuck you, yeah, you know, so
yeah,
so that was why it was my favorite scene. I told you, like, I was gonna try to be a little less animated than we got into
I'm glad you weren't. I'm glad you were.
But yeah, that was such a relief at the end of the movie that we got that. And I'm not even, you know, I've kind of blocked Three from Hell from my memory, so it doesn't count. This is what happens.
I mean, Three from Hell was stupid, but it was like so stupid that it was good. It was just so stupid. It was entertaining. It was like, what are we going to do next? Kind of things. Yeah.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? And that's what's sort of exciting is what will Rob Zombie do next if he's allowed to ever make a movie ever again?
I mean, he may have overstepped at this point. He's had too many
chances.
I mean, everybody can agree. I think even like the major studios can agree. Yes, you are hugely, insanely, undeniably talented. However, you suck. Like, you're not making anything. Like, I think the one thing about Devil's Rejects that everybody really that made it so that he could make as many movies after that he has been the fact that this was his mainstream.
This was aesthetically about as close to a sort of mainstream Rob Zombie film that we've got.
Yeah.
You know, cinematography wise and everything like that, you know, this film. And as well as that, what's insane is that to me, this is still probably for me, his best looking movie, even though so many of his other films like House of Thousand Corpses have been so stylistic, but yet still, even though this feels real, he worked the camera so much better in this film that, which is, you know, this is why it should have been like, he should have looked at it and gone, maybe I should do more like this.
I'll be curious if he's allowed to make anything else, because I think that the Munsters was kind of the studio's Hail Mary, that like, this is a beloved series. Do you promise us that they're not going to turn into backwoods hillbillies screaming and swearing and sexually abusing their children. Okay, you can have it. And then he did it and they were like, Rob.
And it sucks as well. Oh, because he's literally the world's biggest Monsters fan. Like, literally, he has all the props and everything for the Monsters. So if somebody turned around to me and said, who would you want to make a Monsters movie? I'd be like, Rob Zombie. But he's still fucked it up.
I wonder if he's sad about that.
Yeah, he should be.
You should feel bad about yourself, Rob Zombie.
You should feel fucking bad about you, Robbie boy.
Go sit in the corner.
Hang your head, Rob.
Go sit in the corner until we call you back.
Time out.
All right. all right. So I think we have touched on basically everything in this film. Does anybody have any final thoughts before we get into the ratings?
Nope.
Nah.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I think I'm good too. So we'll start with our guest, Gabby. I'll let you go last so you can give your final thoughts, since this is your film. This is your pick. But we'll start with BP. Out of a scale of 1 to 5, what are you rating The Devil's Rejects?
So, well, I kept on saying throughout of it that it's a 5-star movie. But then throughout this, I kept on thinking about it. And I'm like, maybe it's not.
You talked yourself out of it.
So, yeah, I've talked myself out of it. So I'm going to go. So this is a very high, like, 4 for me. Purely because it works so much better than anything else that he's done. That's literally it for me. It has its problems. And that's all Rob Zombie's fault, I think. He's only got himself to blame. And if he didn't create his own problems, we probably would have had a 5-star movie. But it's those little things, like you were saying, Boomer, as well. And like Gabby, you've mentioned as well throughout this, he you know, there's things that he did wrong and he didn't need to. There's a lot of stuff he showed, didn't need to. So, yeah. But overall, this is the thing. I'm talking shit about it. But, yeah, it's still an amazing movie.
Yeah.
And you know, it is. It's a 4 out of 5 for me.
I am. I'm right there with you. Out of a scale of 1 to 5, I also very, very high 4. And this is one of those films, and Gabby's put several on the list this year, that it's like, I haven't watched these films in years because they just make me feel bad. So like, I'm not rushing out, you know, to watch The Devil's Rejects. It's like, oh, it's a fucking rainy Sunday afternoon. I've got pizza. What are we watching? Ah, The Devil's Rejects. You know, no, I never do that.
What's
so
wrong with me?
No, I mean, I get it. It's a really good film. And I actually like that. I like that it makes me feel bad because, you know, BP, you talked a little bit about how, you know, when you're rating a film, you kind of like that, you kind of see it through this technical eye. And so, you know, there's little things, even a film that some would consider near perfect, like there are still little things in here that you know, you kind of notice. For me, I never notice these things because kind of the way that I see things is just like is the feel of the movie, the way, you know, the emotions that it brings to me. And so I kind of overlook a lot of those. And that's the problem for me, is kind of like the wild tone shifts in this film, and how you're right, like it builds up so far that eventually there's nowhere else to go without it just becoming a little bit cartoonish towards the end. And so as good as this is, and as bad as it makes me feel, some of the emotions that it brings, it's still not perfect for me. So it's gotta be a 4 out of 5 for me. All right, Gabby, what about
5.
You? 5 out of 5. I love it.
5 out of 5.
This is perfect for me. It's rewatchable. It makes me feel bad about myself. It makes me scared.
Yeah.
It ticks everything for me.
Rob Zombie would be happy about that. He's gonna be well happy.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that he would make more like this, but he probably won't. I love this. From the first time that I saw it, I loved how different yet familiar everything about this movie was. I loved that he changed the personalities of the characters, because they can't, the way that they are at the Firefly House wouldn't translate to the real world. It wouldn't have worked. I love that he had the wherewithal to do that. He got rid of Baby's stupid fucking giggle. it's like it's a beautiful example, and I don't think that we get very many of them, of a filmmaker learning.
Yeah.
And taking those lessons and using them in their next film. And it could go either way when a filmmaker does that. This went the right way. This movie was just, it was jam-packed. It was action-packed. It was funny. It was disturbing. And it was just overall a really good time.
Nice. I love that. I love that. And I appreciate how much that you love this film and how bad that it makes me feel and how you keep subjecting me to these. We're going to do 7 pretty soon. And that's another one that I'm just like, oh God, it makes me.
Well, what's insane about that? He said that he's literally a comfort movie for me. 7. I don't. That shows how fucked up I am. 7
high
is
five,
a.
High five, BP. Me too. Yeah,
he's literally one of my most watched movies of all time. 7. And that, once again, that's like on a filmmaking perspective as well. I watch it and I'm in awe of every single scene in that film. I'm like, how can this be so good? So I watch it way more than I should.
Well, the listeners, pretty soon, that's a kind of a tease. You're going to get to hear how that movie scarred me as a child. Literally just fucked me up. You can tell. It was bad. But it's a little teaser for down the road. But that is it for us today. We did it. We got through The Devil's Rejects. This was so much fun. And thank you again for joining us, BP. That was this has been
so
a blast.
Nice meeting you, BP.
It was lovely to meet you. It was lovely to speak to you again, Boomer. I obviously I love this, love talking about it. And it's nice to go back and watch a film that, like, you know, does make you feel like shit. but yet something about it makes you enjoy it still. I think it's just because I have such a love for Rob Zombie that I'm like, please don't do anything wrong anymore.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And before we get out of here, I want to give you one more opportunity to kind of plug your wares, tell the listeners where they can find you.
Just go anywhere. If it's socials, any of them, we are on any podcast platform and obviously YouTube as well. Please just go and watch the videos on there, subscribe anywhere. I won't talk too much about it because I've talked too much already. But if you like horror, I'm there. I'm just there bringing out horror content pretty much every day and just enjoying it and get to have these amazing conversations with amazing people like you.
Yeah. Awesome. And guys, like I said, that is the Let's Talk Horror channel. And that we have been talking today with BP. You owe it to yourself to check out all the amazing things that he has done and continues to do. I love his show. I'm a listener of his show. I've been a listener of his show. It's amazing. If you like what we do here in Podcast in the Woods, you're going to enjoy what he does. So go check him out.
Two brilliant podcasts.
Exactly. It's two titans of the end. No. Well, that was a fun conversation that we definitely just had a few minutes ago, not like a couple of weeks ago.
Like 3 weeks ago?
Yeah. But we did put this out on the socials, and we got quite a few responses for The Devil's Rejects. And you will probably, and myself as well, will probably agree with some of them, but maybe not others. All right. So Revenge.
Can't wait to hear what Dewey had to say.
Yeah, he didn't. He did comment.
I know he did.
All right. So Revenge of the Drive-In said, it's a pretty great contemporary Western, which you brought up. Wow. Somebody else picked that up. And it's just enough of that. This movie might have been made by a psychopath energy from the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Definitely makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I could see. Well, yeah. I could see Rob Zombie being a psychopath.
Yeah.
Dewey Pod
Monster. Not in a bad way.
No, not in a bad way. It was a good movie. It's a good movie. So, yeah. Dewey Pod Monster says,
here we go.
1,000% more Brian Posehn and Danny Trejo and less of everything else. It's the high watermark for the Zombo family, but that's not saying much. In fact, let's reboot it as a Danny Trejo, Brian Posehn buddy film. Machete and Posehn. I'll take 10 tickets.
I loved that. I love Brian Posehn. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he definitely is. And I think I said his name like 3 different times during that one tweet. Also, friends of the show, Movies for Days says, I like it. Probably Rob Zombie's best film. Brutal, but actually fits all together in a way that A House of a Thousand Corpses doesn't. Ken Foray and William Forsythe are a delightful addition. Anyone else ever track the way this movie is a lot like Empire Strikes Back?
I don't know what that is.
You say that every time I say something like that. It's one of the Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah. I agree, Movies for Days.
I've seen it, but I don't know. He's going to have to explain that one to me. So I'd be interested to hear what that one's about. Also, friend of the show and a future guest, Ren, says, this is his best film and the only one that seems like the studio just let him do his thing. All the kinks with the characters were worked out and Zombie seemed like he had a real focused idea on this one. Instead of the chaos plot that was House of a Thousand Corpses, excellent secondary cast. And he's got more, of course.
Oh.
The best use of Freebird in the grand finale. I'll give this 8 out of 10 as it's legitimately great, a great exploitation film. It's dirty, it's nasty, and all around great time. I wish the studios would let Rob cook like this again.
Yes.
Movie Runner from Rob Zombie. I've seen the Firefly trilogy, 31, Lords of Salem, and this is the only one that I didn't like.
Controversial.
That is. He says, I find that strange because I know a lot of people consider this his best film. I'm not sure what didn't work for me. By the way, my favorite is Lords of Salem. At least in that aspect, he's got very good taste. All right. Two Guys and Some Horror. Very enjoyable. As you mentioned, it's an insane ride. I think that's what makes Rob Zombie's films watchable / enjoyable. They might not always be home runs, but they are above the median in horror.
Agreed.
Bob Scott says, meh, to be honest.
Thanks, Bob.
Not agree.
Disagree, Bob, but thank you.
Michael Brennan, one of the best endings to a horror movie ever made and my favorite of the Firefly trilogy.
Yep.
I
can absolutely see that.
Yeah, I can too. It's not my favorite. The House of a Thousand Corpses is still my favorite, but I do like
it. I can see where other people.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Well, that is it to us. What the fuck I'm saying. That is it for us. And we do thank you so much for everybody who posted, responded, and we do try to do this every time when I'm not being an idiot and I forget. So send in those comments, send in what you think about the movie, and we will read those out over the show. And you can do that by contacting us on Twitter or Instagram at Woods Podcast 1. You can search for us on Facebook at Podcast in the Woods. Or download the Slasher app and search for us on the Slasher app at Podcast in the Woods. We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way, and that is patreon.com/woodspodcast. And finally, if you like what we do, and we hope that you do, hope we bring a little bit of joy into into the world, then give us a 5-star rating and review on whatever podcasting platform that you listen to. It really, really helps out the show just to get more listeners into the shenanigans that we do, Gabby.
I agree.
So we did it. We covered Rob Zombie's The Devil's Rejects. Thank you for, again, I'm glad that you picked this one. I had a good time talking about it. I had a good time with our guest, BP. He is such a delight.
Yes. Thank you, friend.
Yeah. And that is it. So say good night or good day, Gabby, whatever it is.
Tutti fucking fruity.
I love that. All right. And until next time, stay scurry.